This is the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm David Walker. Today, I am joined by Trey Downey, podcast host of Downey & Martez that covers a lot of topics, but specifically, he is here to talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Falcons' Week 2 opponent, a division opponent. Atlanta will be on the road to take on Tom Brady and the defending Super Bowl champs. Trey, thanks for joining me, first of all.
Thanks for having me, man. It's we're in football season. Great to talk about any game, even one that might have the biggest line of the week.
that may be an understatement at this point. I think that line shifted into double digits. It may have already been in double digits, and it keeps creeping up the more that people watch that Falcons game again. So let's just jump into it. I want to start with, obviously, where everyone sort of recognizes the Bucs now, and that is on offense. And it starts with Tom Brady, who, a few years ago apparently sold his soul to, some dark forces and has refused to age. 44, I'm 46, and I feel like I'm 30 or 40 years older than Tom Brady at this point. Any signs of him slowing down, or does he continue to look like the greatest quarterback that literally has ever played the game?
Oh, no signs whatsoever. I mean, I'm with you, though. I was with a lot of people after 2 years ago in the playoffs when they faced the Titans and he threw that pick six to end the game. I was like, Tom's probably on the backside of his career. But then when everything went down and he came to the Buccaneers, and if you've listened to myself on radio over the past, 5 to 10 years, or you've listened to me on the Bucs Nation podcast with Len Martez, you knew my thoughts on Jameis Winston, that whole situation there, and that a change needed to be made. Now you bring in the greatest quarterback of all time, regardless of if he was on the backside of his career, was going to be an absolute upgrade over what Jameis Winston brought the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. Now you can talk about whatever you want to talk about as far as arm strength goes and Tom Brady. Look at what he did last year with all of the COVID protocols. They didn't have a traditional training camp or anything to get the rhythm down with this offense, and they struggled a bit. I mean, people saw those early games with the Bears, with the Giants, with right. the Saints, and you didn't know where this team was going to go. But then in the late stages of the season, against the Lions, against the Falcons, they kind of got things rolling and then went into the playoffs. And what happened there was what happened there. And then again, phenomenal in the first game against the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, there were turnovers, but especially the one interception that went off of Leonard Fournette's hands, not on Brady whatsoever. Right. And I think Brady hasn't slowed down, but I think he's been revitalized because look at through all the years, even the year that he had Randy Moss and they set records. They almost went undefeated. Phenomenal weapon. One of the greatest receivers of all time in Randy Moss. But now, last year and this year, in totality, this is the best slate of weapons Tom Brady has ever had. So even if his skills have diminished a little bit, when you have those kind of skills and you haven't had this kind of toolbox to dish it out to throughout your entire career, you're obviously going to extend the life of your career. And when things are going well, you're obviously going to get some of that confidence back. Not to say that Tom Brady ever lost any confidence in New England.
I think the interesting conversation when he came to the Bucs was, for any just football fan was mm-hmm. you separate him now from Belichick for the first time. Who stands apart in that broken relationship? Was it Belichick? Was it Brady? And I feel like last year answered that question with the success of New England and obviously the tremendous success that Brady had with Tampa Bay last year. But you mentioned the weapons, and this is really interesting to me because before Antonio Brown got here, Mike Evans, sort of a criminally underrated receiver when you're talking about some of the top receivers in the league, mm-hmm. Godwin, who has really sort of emerged over the past several years, incredible receiver in his own right. And then you add freaking Antonio Brown. I don't know that there's a three wide receiver set that is more dangerous than this one. And who's his top target right now? It feels like Brown is getting a lot of the attention, but From week to week, he could easily shift gears to any of the other guys. Who's his top guy, and are any of them slowing down? Because it seems like Evans maybe isn't quite at his peak or what he was, you know, several years ago, but still a great receiver.
I'm not going to go there with Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans is still at his peak. I think that there isn't necessarily – if in an ultimate situation where you need – to target one guy for a first down or something like that, I think the answer is still probably Mike Evans. But mm-hmm. as far as who gets the most targets, who gets the most yards every single week, it's going to vary week by week. It's going to depend on what the defense is doing, who the defense tries to take away. Admittedly, last year, I was not the biggest proponent of bringing Antonio Brown in. I thought it was unnecessary.
Really?
Yes, what they have in Scotty Miller. I mean, everybody knows what he did at the end of the first half in the Green Bay game in the playoffs last year. But Scotty Miller is a guy who I think can emerge into a very good slot receiver. And then a rookie that they drafted last year out of Minnesota, Tyler Johnson, I have really high hopes for. And then look at what they have at tight end with Rob Gronkowski, with Cameron Brait, who I think through the playoffs last year developed a lot of trust with Tom Brady. And then you have OJ Howard, who you're still waiting to, you know, blossom in to the player that everyone thought he was going to be. So I think Mike Evans is still the number one wide receiver on this football team. But I think especially if you're having Bucks receivers on your fantasy football team or something like that, it's going to vary week by week as to who gets the targets. And a lot of that is going to depend on what happens on the defensive side of the ball and how they're covering the team. A lot of what I saw in the final preseason game with Brady's connection with Godwin, I think that this could really truly be a huge, huge breakout season for Chris Godwin. He's on the franchise tag this year, so he's either going to get paid big money from the Bucks, or he's going to demand a huge market outside of Tampa Bay. But yeah, week by week, it's going to vary. Whether I don't think you're going to see Rob Gronkowski scoring two touchdowns every week for this team, and I don't think you're going to see Mike Evans with only a couple of catches every week. It's just going to vary, and I think all of these guys are going to end up getting their touches, and I think that Evans will probably end up continuing his great streak of 1,000-yard seasons to start his career.
Unbelievable. You mentioned the tight ends. Obviously, everyone knows who Gronkowski is, absolute legend at the position. And I want to say this is a Falcons podcast, and I'm going to get crap for talking positively about the Bucks. It's a division opponent, but I'm just shooting straight. Like, these are it's an incredible set of talent. For my listeners who are listening in, I'm just trying to be very blunt and honest about the situation.
Do your listeners want you to go on here and say that Tom Brady's crap?
Oh, I know.
Mike Evans is overrated. Ridiculous. Like in the past, like, I'm not going to, when Downey and Martez comes out this week on Bucks Nation, I'm not going to go saying that Calvin Ridley's crap, the Falcons shouldn't have drafted Kyle Pitts. No,
exactly.
Give credit where credit is due.
Yeah. So, but on those lines, you mentioned the other tight ends, and this is sort of insane to me. Obviously, OJ Howard still needs to turn into that, you know, first round pick that they invested in him several years ago. Cameron Brait, again, another really good receiving option. What is the, I guess, standard formation, or is it, you know, do they like to have two tight ends out there a lot? Is it the three wide receivers? It feels like no matter which formation the Bucks go into, they have talent at every single position. So should we be looking out for two tight end sets? Is it going to be primarily three wide receivers? What do you think is going to be like the primary offense the Falcons are going to face on Sunday?
I think it's probably the three wide receiver set. I mean, if you look the starting quote unquote offense, you consider Evans, Godwin, and Brown all starters. Gronk is your starter at tight end. I do think they'll mix things in because Gronk is, you know, the most prolific pass catching tight end that we've probably seen in the NFL, but he's also the best blocking tight end on the Buccaneers. And I think with guys like like Howard and with guys like Cam Brate, those are guys that you don't necessarily have to have that you don't have to have their hand in the ground next to the tackle. You can have them split out in the slot as well. So I do think you'll see a sprinkling in of those guys. Last week, we obviously saw a little bit more of OJ Howard than we saw of Cam Brate, and Gronk had the game that he had. But I think the three wide receiver set is primarily what you're going to see out of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not only this weekend, but moving forward. But with the tight ends that they have, they obviously can go two tight ends anytime that is necessary or that they want to. And we saw the success Tom Brady had with a two tight end set throughout the course of his career in New England.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Tell me about the running backs. Obviously, Fournette, former first round pick for the Jaguars, the top five pick, in fact. But actually, I think the name that may get a lot of attention this weekend is Ronald Jones. So tell me a little bit about these two running backs and what Falcons fans can look forward to from the backfield from on Sunday.
So last Thursday night, the running backs were probably, other than what we saw a little bit on defense and letting the Cowboys do what they did, the running backs were probably the least bright spot for the Buccaneers. They both had their issues, as I mentioned earlier, Fournette with the pass that ended up getting intercepted. And then Ronald Jones got stripped and never came back in the game. And Bruce Arians said afterwards that that Rojo let it get to him. And that's why he didn't put him back in the game. Now, my take on the running backs is this. Leonard Fournette, everybody was absolutely enamored with what he did in the playoffs. Playoff Lenny, Lombardi Lenny. Obviously, he was a high draft pick last year in Jacksonville. But I think throughout the course of the season last year, Ronald Jones proved that he was the better running back and the best running back on this football team. Now, what happened last week with the fumble, which he had a lot of issues with when he was a rookie. I was out there a lot at training camp when he was a rookie, and how he got that ball stripped in that game against Dallas, there were drills where the coaches would just come behind strip after strip after strip on Ronald Jones. And he looked like he might be a bust as a pick that was at the top of the second round when they drafted him where they drafted him. But he has grown in to a running back who last year, for a good portion of the season, I saw potential for Ronald Jones to be a top 10 running back in this league. Now, after what happened last week, I was very skeptical about how the future was going to play out for Ronald Jones. But Bruce Arians has come out and said he's going to start this week. So he has bounced back in practice and in that running back room to where Bruce Arians has the confidence in him. And I think Ronald Jones is going to go out there on Sunday with something to prove. Now, Bruce Arians has always said he's going to go with the hot hand. And before that fumble, they were rotating Fournette and Jones in this past weekend. So we'll have to see how they end up splitting the carries. But I do think that you could see a heavy dose of Ronald Jones early, especially in a game where the Bucs are expected to win, to get some of that confidence back going for Ronald Jones. And again, you'll probably see a heavy dose of Giovanni Bernard as well, as he is the third down running back for this football team now. And I think that he is going to continue to offer a significant upgrade on what the Bucs were able to get out of Shady McCoy last year.
My goodness. all right. A plethora of riches. All right. The offensive line. Last question on the offense. Donovan Smith, left tackle. Tristan Wirfs, right tackle. Arguably one of the best tackle duos on the outside. Are there any weaknesses on this offensive line that have you a bit concerned? Is it the center? Is it the interior? I think Kappa is you know, rounding out to be actually a very good starter at right guard. What potential weaknesses do you see on this offensive line, if any? And there may not be any.
I mean, throughout the years, you could probably say Donovan Smith was the weak link on this offensive line. And obviously going into last year, people were worried about him protecting Brady's blind side, but Donovan Smith doesn't get a contract extension and isn't still on this football team if Tom Brady doesn't believe in him. So if Tom Brady believes in him as his left tackle, then I'm going to start to believe in Donovan Smith. I think Ali Marpet and Ryan Jensen, those are the stalwarts of this offensive line right now. Jensen's contract situation, we don't know what the future holds with that, but if you want to point out a weakness, I guess you could still consider what Donovan Smith a little questionable, and I wouldn't be surprised at some point in the future if Tristan Wirfs is moved from right tackle to left tackle, because he's already blossoming as one of the better offensive linemen in the NFL, and the Bucs were able to get him where they got him in the draft last year. Kappa, that's a guy who we thought coming into this offseason that there were no position battles on offense other than maybe Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette, but we knew the carries were going to be split. He won the starting job, even though he didn't play a lot in the playoffs last year. He was injured. So Aaron Stinney played at right guard in the playoffs. So Kappa, and going into last season, you would have said Kappa, a guy who came out of a small school, wasn't 100% proven, and then Wirfs, a rookie, would be the weakness of the offensive line. But then Wirfs is what he is, one of the highest graded, if you look into analytics, offensive linemen in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So maybe if you want me to rank the offensive linemen, Kappa and Donovan Smith are probably the two that you'd have to watch for. But again, that's the Falcons. Where is the pass rush really coming from? If I'm
going to be honest. Absolutely nowhere. So that's why. Yeah. I mean, the only name that stands out because he can wreck games is Grady Jarrett. I mean, he's done in the past. But past him, there's absolutely no help. And, you know, to be blunt, I think if any Falcons fan is looking at this defense and thinking there's an advantage anywhere, you're probably looking at it with blinders on. The Falcons, you know, A.J. Terrell at corner could turn into a really good one mm-hmm. this year and into next year. But then you have a bunch of question marks. This is not the matchup in which I think a player like A.J. Terrell emerges, because he's going to go up against three receivers that could be a number one receiver on any other club in the NFL. So that's a hell of a way to welcome a second year player into his 17th game starting. So God, it just, like, I keep talking about this offense and I want to go drink something now, but it's two sides of the ball. We're going to talk about the defense and what they may end up doing, and if Matt Ryan's going to make it out alive on Sunday. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back on the Falcoholic Podcast. This is Dave Walker. I'm joined by Trey Downey. We're talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going into the week 2 matchup in Tampa, hosting the Falcons. A Falcons team that got absolutely decimated at home. And it started up front with the offensive line, which I don't have to tell anyone who watched that game. It was absolutely dreadful up the middle. Jalen Mayfield, the rookie, scored one of the lowest pass blocking scores I've ever seen on PFF. He had a 1.4. I think you get 5 points just for showing up. So I think he actually graded negatively. I think the only way you could grade worse as an interior offensive lineman is if you literally turn around and tackle the quarterback yourself. That was how bad that performance was. And now we're going up against a Bucs defensive line that has talent across the board. And one name jumped out to me last week in watching the game against the Cowboys, because I think it jumped out to everyone watching that game, and that was Vita Vea. He was an absolute freak on the field. I think that was what people were expecting him to become. Tell me a little bit about this defensive front and why Falcons fans should probably invest in a lot of alcohol before Sunday gets here.
Alcohol and acid, something like that. You need to
battery acid, all of it.
Yeah. Invest in something. Invest in a good remote if you want to change the channel. But yeah, Vita Vea. I talked about it last week on Downey and Martez on Bucs Nation. What he looks like right now, obviously, he's not the same style of player 100% as Aaron Donald is out in LA.
Right.
He's a bigger guy. He's a true nose tackle, all of that. But if he continues to do what he did, literally pushing the Cowboys center back into Dak Prescott's lap, you have to consider him as probably the second best interior defensive lineman in the NFL right now, besides Aaron Donald. I'm that high on Vita Vea. Vita Vea is a guy who a lot of Bucs fans were questioning the Bucs taking him, and when it happened, and especially injury concerns. He got hurt as a rookie in training camp. He was hurt for a lot of last season, but then when he came back, and when he did in the playoffs, made a huge impact there. So Vita Vea to me has now, I mean, this is a star-studded defensive front. I mean, you've got Ndamukong Suh there. You've got on the edges. You've got Jason Pierre-Paul, who has had the success he's had throughout the course of his career, and now having new life here in Tampa Bay. They're moving him around. There were multiple times where he was lined up over the center on pass rushing situations.
Yeah, last week
against the Cowboys. And then you've got Shaq Barrett, who totally deserved the contract that the Bucs gave him this offseason. And he got to Dak Prescott this past weekend or last week against Dallas as well. And then you've got a rookie and Joe Tryon Soyinka, who I think a lot of GMs are going to be slapping themselves of letting the Buccaneers get what looks like could be another elite pass rusher on this football team. And we saw through last year that the Bucs were able to get to the passer, something that throughout the years here in Tampa Bay, they went years and years and years without having a guy with double-digit sacks before Shaq Barrett was able to do it his first year in Tampa Bay. But now this defensive line is one of the strengths of this football team. They, even before they got that pass rush going and shored up the secondary a little bit, you couldn't run on this football team. And I think that that's going to be something to watch, because I watched a good portion of that Atlanta game last Sunday. And admittedly, I was, especially early, I was impressed with what they were able to do running the ball. I did not expect Cordarrelle Patterson and Mike Davis to be able to move the ball on the ground. I thought they were going to be extremely, extremely pass heavy, even with their new head coach coming over from Tennessee. So I was a little bit impressed with the running game early on and how well they were able to move the ball. And I think if you're going to have success against the Buccaneers, you want to keep that offense off of the field.
Right.
But the Bucs defense, they've shown if they have any weakness, it's not against the run. So I think you're going to have to go back to old faithful Matt Ryan and hope that the Bucs can't get the pass rush that we think they can get, considering how the offensive line performed in pass blocking situations last week. But maybe they could surprise us, because last week I didn't see them coming out and having the success that they did early with Cordarrelle Patterson. So maybe it'll be a bit of a surprise. And I think that if there is a path to success, it's either Matt Ryan having an absolutely huge game with Kyle Pitts breaking out, or it's the running game being able to keep the Bucs offense off of the field. But do I have a ton of faith in that, considering that the Bucs have had the best run defense in the league for a few years now? No, I don't.
Yeah. and I think the Philadelphia defensive front is a very talented one as well. So not quite as deep, but arguably in the top five, I think, in
for sure. Yeah.
The defensive, trenches. So it's sort of a back-to-back nightmare scenario when you're trying to deploy an offensive line with two new starters in the middle with the Falcons. So you mentioned Matt Ryan needing to, be successful through the air. And I do want to say, because I think you and I have both seen this, if you've watched the NFC South over the years, division games can often go completely off script. You know, you'll go into the game predicting 35-28 and you get something like 6-3 and you're like, where did that come from? There's no way in hell I'm predicting that for this game. My prediction is going to be incredibly dire and also require a good dose of battery acid. However, you mentioned Matt Ryan, the passing game. The Falcons do have, even with Julio Jones gone, they've got Calvin Ridley, who I think is one of the best route running receivers in the league. A really, really good follow up to, not the same kind of receiver as Julio Jones, but I think a very good receiver in his own right. Russell Gage, who has been a very reliable slot receiver, had over 700 yards receiving last year. And then it falls off after that. Who are these guys going to match up to on the outside at corner? I know you guys just lost one of your top corners, going on IR. I think that remains to be seen. But what does the cornerback situation look like for the Bucs?
Yeah, so Sean Murphy-Bunting, that injury looked a lot worse than what it is possibly going to be. He did go on IR, but there is hope that it is only going to be a short-term IR situation. So on the outside, you're going to see the guys that are typically on the outside, both Auburn cornerbacks Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean. Murphy Bunting is also considered a starter on this defense, but he's primarily the slot guy. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're going – last week against the Cowboys, they picked on Jamel Dean a little bit. And that worried me to the extent of, yes, Murphy Bunting went down, but it's not like they moved Dean into a situation that he wasn't used to. He played on the outside primarily. Okay. So if that's a situation that, like, he was graded very high last year as an outside cornerback. So if the Falcons can take advantage of that, you didn't see a ton of success against Carlton Davis. And I think that the Bucs would like to have Carlton Davis on Calvin Ridley for the majority of this game. So whether it is whether it is Russell Gage taking advantage of Ross Cockrell, who stepped into that slot corner situation, that could be something Atlanta could take advantage of. And then obviously we don't know what's going to happen as far as the safety situation is. Jordan Whitehead didn't play last week. I don't 100% know that he's going to be ready for this weekend. So those are where you're primarily going to see Atlanta try and take advantage of the Buccaneers. A lot of what Dallas did last week was getting the ball out of Dak Prescott's hands very quickly. And Atlanta throughout the years, especially, you know, us in Tampa, we know Dirk Cutter like to push the ball down the field.
Right.
So you don't necessarily see the ball getting out of his hands very quickly. So I think that, you know, getting the ball into Gage's hands quickly, you know, a screen game, getting the ball to Mike Davis, who also us in the NFC South know, especially with how often Christian McCaffrey has been injured, that's a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. I think those are probably going to be the situations where you're going to take advantage of. I don't necessarily who do you expect? Who is Atlanta lining up on the outside opposite Calvin Ridley that would probably be going against Jamel Dean? Because maybe a breakout game from that guy could be something that we've seen. Obviously, you said Gage is probably the number two receiver on this team, but they like to put him in the slot.
Exactly.
And then Kyle Pitts, who is a rookie, but he's, I guess, still considered a tight end. But I see I saw them using him in the slot last week as well. So I don't know who else is going to line up on the outside for Atlanta against Dean if they are going to be able to take advantage of that again, even though I think last week was a little bit of an anomaly for Jamel Dean.
Yeah, it's really interesting on because Gage is more of a slot receiver. On the depth chart, Alamide Zaccheaus, who's only 5'8", would be the next guy on the outside. Bluntly, the Falcons aren't going to run a lot of three wide receiver sets. So the one thing you may see, I think, is to your point, Kyle Pitts, throughout the preseason in training camp, we only saw him play two snaps in actual games. But in the practices, they like to flex him out wide as well. So he actually could be someone that gets some of those matchups with Dean. And as many people know, Pitts has the potential, you know, like all the physical traits are there to become an incredibly productive tight end and maybe even more. The guy's got
four
speed, but it didn't happen last week. And I think the Falcons fans were frustrated with that. And that may just, you know, sometimes that just comes down to the game plan going off script and the coach having to adjust and just not getting the guys in there like he wants to. Linebacker. This is, I want to say this up front because I've been able to watch this guy. I think he was drafted in 2012. It was in that time frame. Arguably one of the best linebackers in the league. And it seems like it has taken a long time for him to get that recognition mm-hmm. in Lavonte David. Even though he is on a rival team, I have incredible respect for this player. He's one of my favorites in the NFC South. He's obviously on the backside of 30, and he's got Devin White next to him. Tell me about this linebacker core, and is Lavonte David, in your mind, still one of the best linebackers that people don't talk about enough? Tell me a little bit about Devin White as well.
So it's kind of crazy, right? That or for years, Lavonte David was an underappreciated guy. For my money, one of the best linebackers in the entire NFL, and no one ever talked about him. And then Tom Brady gets here, and the defense is finally very good, and the Bucs are winning the Super Bowl, and now they have Devin White, who a lot of people consider the best linebacker on this football team now. So now that is not a shot at Lavonte. I still think that, especially the leadership that he brings in the defensive locker room, he to me is still probably the most important part of this defense. But Devin White, the intangibles, I mean, the guy is so fast. And I think, as we've talked a lot about the Bucs and the tandems that they have or at receiver, and then the weapons that they have on offense, and then what the defensive line brings. But those two, as a tandem of inside linebackers, it really can't get much better than that. You have the talent and the raw speed and tackling ability that you have with a Devin White, and then you have just the leadership and intelligence that you have with Lavonte David. Those guys are phenomenal. And then if you want to look as far as, a third or fourth linebacker on this football team, Kevin Minter, who a guy who's played a lot of special teams and a guy who played in Arizona when Bruce Arians was there, so he's familiar with this scheme. And then a guy that they drafted this year late in the draft, KJ Britt out of Auburn, who in the preseason I thought had the potential to take the spot from Kevin Minter as the third inside linebacker on this football team. So I think that that's a guy that, I mean, look, Lavonte just signed a contract extension, so I'm not trying to push him out whatsoever. He is still phenomenal. But I mean, you've got Devin White, and then you're already bringing up a guy who you could end up being a steal in KJ Britt, who I think has the potential to be a starting linebacker in the NFL. It's just another position where there is kind of an embarrassment of riches. And we've gone a long way from Bucks fans wanting to fire Jason Light for trading up in the second round to draft Roberto Aguayo.
Oh, well, I didn't even have to bring it up. yeah, that was something special. And right now, as a Falcons fan, I am not going to tell any jokes on any franchise. We're feeling the pain. All right. Trey, thank you so much for joining the podcast, giving us a preview of this incredibly deep and talented Bucks team from what we're seeing. Last question for you. Give us your prediction for how things are going to go down on Sunday.
So I'm going to predict a Bucks win, and I'm going to predict that the Bucks cover. Last week I said that the Cowboys weren't in the same tier of team as the Buccaneers, and they played the Bucks a lot better than I expected them to. So I'm not going to put it past Atlanta, because as I've said, on offense, especially at the receiver position, they have the potential to be able to attack this Buccaneers team and in ways to put some points on the board. They're going to have to do that if they're going to win this football game. But I think that the Bucs win by at least two touchdowns. I just don't see Atlanta replicating the same game plan that the Cowboys were able to do by getting the ball out of Dak Prescott's hands that quickly, or even, going back to that running game that I thought was somewhat successful last week. I think the Bucs, maybe even more than two touchdowns, maybe something like a 30-10 type of game
Ooh.
On Sunday in Tampa.
I'll be honest, it would not shock me. And yet again, though, it is a division game, and God knows those things have often gone completely bonkers. So I
I
think
mean, look at
Falcons.
what was it? I think a Thursday night a couple of years ago, where the Bucks were wearing the Color Rush uniforms, and Atlanta just
Oh, yeah.
absolutely ripped the Bucks to shreds. So things can change very quickly. This division has had a tendency of, the team that finished in last place going worse for first. And not to get off on a completely different tangent, the Falcons have some rebuilding to do,
Yep.
but I don't necessarily. This is going to sound crazy, and people are going to, another NFC South fan, other NFC South fans listening to me on another NFC South podcast. I don't think that it's a given that Atlanta finishes last in the NFC South this year. And that's not because I think Carolina is bad. I think Carolina is potentially a playoff team. I think a lot of what we saw last week in Jacksonville was fool's gold. And I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, you are not going to get arguments from Falcons fans on that one. I like it. Finishing on a really bright note in dark days for Falcons. Fantastic. All right, Trey, again, thank you. Tell our listeners where they can find you and what you have going on.
So you can follow me on Twitter at TD Experience. And then every week you can check out myself and Lynn Martez. Just search Bucks Nation wherever you listen to your podcasts, and it'll be titled Downey and Martez. We come out every single week, and you'll be able to listen to us there. And then check out BucksNation.com as well for the latest and greatest on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Fantastic. As for me, guys, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW. Updates for this podcast at FalcoholicPod. And of course, our articles daily at Falcoholic.com. So for Trey Downey, this is Dave Walker. Thank you guys for listening in. We'll talk with you next time.